You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show. Serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready?
Yeah, good morning, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle. For the first time in a long time, I think the Seahawks may have found their identity again. I know you think I'm too obsessed with identity. It's fine. I don't know how you play without it. You have to know who you are in order to succeed in doing what you do. And last night, for the first time in a long time, I felt like Pete Carroll did what Pete Carroll wants to do. It didn't lead to a win, unfortunately, because Geno Smith is just not good enough to get that win late in a game. That's kind of where he's at. He's a backup quarterback for a reason. But I hope it showed you that you have to have a plan. And what was the plan? What does Pete want to do?
Run.
He wants to run the ball. He wants to be balanced. He thinks that all of your let Russ cook talk is malarkey. He's been compromising. He's been trying to find a way to work with his quarterback. He's been trying to find a way to, quote-unquote, modernize. But at his core, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, Pete Carroll truly believes that the best way to win in the NFL is through owning the other team through the run. That it just opens up so much more of what he wants to do. He wants it to be balanced. We've had this talk with him a million times. He wants it to be balanced because of the way the running game opens up the passing game, because of the way it makes it easier for the quarterback, because of the way it completes the circle of toughness, right? Because it allows for the big chunk plays in the passing game, which he wants. It's all connected.
All the things Brandon Staley said.
He's got a specific plan for what he wants to do. And for all of this year, he has been compromising. I want to run. He wants to pass. How do we do a little of this and borrow from that? And that's not being convicted about your identity. And yesterday, I saw a coach that at halftime said, no more. No more will I let this happen. No more will I continue to compromise with a player that's not even out here. We're going to do this my way. I'm the coach. I'm in charge. We're doing this my way. And guess what happened? They came out in the second half like a house of fire. They were great. They ran the ball down their throats. They ran it on third and seven. They ran it on second and 20. They had success doing it. They ran the ball on third and seven for how many yards? Was it like a 22-yard play or something like that?
Homer run? Like
the
26?
Homer run.
Something like that, yeah.
They ran it when you're not supposed to even run it. And they had success doing it because they were convicted. They were convicted about it.
The handoff goes to Homer. He's got a first down and then some inside the 20, down to the 15, and finally dragged down from behind by Joe Hayden, the Pro Bowl cornerback. You talk about crossing everybody up. What a play call by Shane Waldron. I'm sitting here looking to see what the coverage is going to be for the throw, and it's a run for a first down.
And they did it so well, it opened up plays in the passing game and the tight ends, and Gerald Everett had a big play. It all stemmed from the run. So, yes, I will admit to you that today we taped with Pete Carroll. We did it real early. They got off the plane super late slash early, however you want to view it. Pete went right to the facility, and so we taped before the show. I don't generally play sound from an upcoming interview, but I think it's important. We'll play you the whole thing at 9:30 because I want it to be in its spot. But I got to play this because I was asking Pete about what happened at the second half, what happened at halftime, and he said he was mad. He said he was pissed that was not recognizable as the kind of team he wants to be. But look what he said about the second half.
That's how we needed to play. That's how we need to play for the next couple weeks and on into the season. And really, Mike, that's how we've played when we're at our best for years. And there's a lot of people that want to, you know, gripe and complain about, you know, running the football and all that. But you saw, we scored 20 points in the second half. How many points you need to score? I mean, 40 points in a game, that's pretty good, you know. And we did it by controlling the football game with the strength of our team.
Everybody hear that?
Do you need to play it again?
Everybody hear that? If you're listening this morning and you want to know what Pete's future is all about, is right there in those 26 seconds. That's it. Pete Carroll is as convicted about this as he's going to be on anything. You got to go run the ball. He believes that that's when they've always been good, is when they run the ball best. He believes it's when they were best last night, and he believes it's how they're going to be best moving forward. That's the blueprint. Run the ball. You want me to play it again? Honestly, I think it's that important. This is the future of the Seahawks. I'll play it twice.
That's how we needed to play. That's how we need to play for the next couple weeks and on into the season. And really, Mike, that's how we've played when we're at our best for years. And there's a lot of people that want to, you know, gripe and complain about, you know, running the football and all that. But you saw, we scored 20 points in the second half. How many points you need to score? I mean, 40 points in a game, that's pretty good, you know. We did it by controlling the football game with the strength of our team.
With the strength of our team. This is the blueprint, man, moving forward.
Can I be a little bit of the Debbie Downer that apparently that's become my role on
the
show?
Yeah, you're now the Debbie Downer. I appreciate that.
Sorry. That sounds great. But with Collins now injured too, yeah. Chris Carson on IR, how do you feel about that being the strength moving forward?
Well, here's what I'm going to tell you, Maura Dooley, the voice of negativity in the other room. Guess who's coming back this week?
Oh, no.
Oh, your
I
boy,
told
boy.
You a long time ago. Play it. I told you a long time ago that before this year was out, Rashad Penny would make one enormous contribution. He will have a huge game. That game is coming Monday night in front of a national audience at home against the Saints.
Are you calling
getting
it now?
A bold prediction on a Monday morning?
100
right.
yards. 100 yards for Penny. Yeah. I also think Collins is going to be able to play.
Okay. So I'm just writing this down for a future take the yell in case he doesn't.
Well, he might not. Okay. But I'm calling it right now.
I just want to make sure everyone's aware of this future take the yell.
I will say, I sort of came up with this idea before Pete said, and he says this on the show at 9:30, that Collins may be able to go this week. So if Alex Collins is not able to go, Rashad Penny, 100-plus yards. Guarantee it. Put it in the books right now. If Collins does go.
Or Pete tells us that he had a setback and he's not going to play this week.
You know, Maura, we'll see. If Rashad Penny plays and Alex Collins does not, sign him up for 100 yards right now. Sign it up. And don't distract. You're trying to distract me from the point. This is negativity over there. So your issue is that they're not going to have the running back? It doesn't matter who's the running back. Look at Baltimore.
All I asked was what your confidence level is in this being their identity moving forward.
High.
If they don't have.
It is high.
Okay.
My confidence is high. My confidence is high. This is what Pete wants to do. Here's the thing. This is the offense that they'd already built. This is what their team roster was drafted for. Everything else is a compromise. Everything else is a compromise to Russell Wilson and poor Shane Waldron stuck in the middle of all of this. Honestly, he's like the parent, like the child of divorcing parents, except he opted into the family.
Yeah, adopted.
He's like, hey, I want to be there. It seems like those two aren't getting along. Can I go jump in the middle of that? No, he's in a tough spot and trying to figure out how to keep everybody happy. We've been saying that since before the season started. But last night, Pete made it pretty clear. There's nobody else to keep happy. Make me happy. Run the darn ball.
Now help me understand something. He said in that cut that this is going to be kind of the identity moving forward the next couple weeks. Mm-hmm. What happens when Russ comes back? How does this change that relationship?
If
this proves to work the next couple weeks and you see the run game have being so established, what happens when Russ returns?
That is a really good question. I don't know. I don't know what happens then.
Yeah.
If they win the next two games by running the football, and then Russell comes back, how do you not? How does he not see that that's what makes the offensive line better, that that's what's working for your team? He'd have to see that, right? But does Russ want to see that? Or does Russ want to be an MVP? He's not going to be an MVP this year. So maybe Russ rides it out and says, okay, yeah, I'll hand the ball off. We'll run the ball more this year. But at the end of the year, I think he probably says, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to do that. I'm not interested in that style of offense at this phase of my career. I think he'd be making a mistake, but I think that could happen. I think Russell, I mean, if I'm Russell last night, I'm pointing at this and going, hey, I'm pretty darn important. I hope nobody's been taking me for granted. I hope you see when I run versus when Geno Smith runs, how big of a difference it is. And I don't just mean like a running play. I mean, like, do you remember the play at the end of the first half? Geno was running to his left, had to throw. He had Tyler Lockett. There wasn't a player within 15 yards of him. He looked like he played for the other team against the Seahawks last week. He was so open, there was nobody near him across the middle. And Geno just Couldn't get it there.
Right.
He's not Russell Wilson.
Right.
He's okay. He's a backup quarterback for a reason. Russell Wilson is an elite franchise quarterback for a reason. We take him for granted. Honestly, I think people do all the time. But I don't think he's going to win this battle on what style of offense they want to play because Pete is convicted. And he saw, like, he obviously went in at halftime and said, no more, no Moss. We need to go out and do this the way I've always done it, the way I know wins football games, regardless of how other people want me to change. So I thought that was by far the biggest takeaway from this game, by far, is that they came out and did it Pete's way in the second half. So that was great. I think that's huge. What did you think of Geno in the game? I thought he was exactly what he would be. Okay. Made a couple of decent throws, and he should. He's a professional quarterback, and people say he's one of the better backups in the league. He's competent. But did he do anything special?
Yeah, you're right. A couple good throws, because that's what you're going to say.
When I
use this example of that throw over the middle to Tyler that
was a good
cleared
throw.
The defender. Yeah,
that was a really good throw.
That was a really good throw.
Throw to DK Metcalf at the end of the game that led to DK bizarrely choosing to stay inbounds and risk losing the game
right.
over what I would assume was sort of a selfish play. I don't know, maybe Pete liked it. But those two throws were good throws. The problem is he had two critical errors in overtime. Critical errors. First getting sacked and then fumbling the ball. So he's got to win these next two games for the playoffs to still be a realistic shot. I think the only way to do that is by running the football. Here's the thing, though. As hard as it is to imagine this team in the playoffs today, and I know LA and Arizona are both winning, you're 2-4, they're 6-0 and 5-1. So obviously things look a little bleak, but Look at the actual schedule. If you can, let's assume you can win the next two games, because I think everything kind of starts with that. Beat New Orleans and beat Jacksonville. If you can do that, you're 4-4, right? You're 4-4 if you can win those two games. After that, you do have tough ones, four really tough games still to go. Arizona twice, LA, and Green Bay. Those are your four toughest games. You have to split those, which is not easy. But let's say you can split those. Go 2-2, okay? Now I'm at 6-6. You then need to essentially win out, but you do it against Houston, Washington, San Francisco, Detroit, Chicago. You can
All winnable games.
If you are a playoff team, you should be able to beat those five teams.
And yeah, none of those teams sound scary.
If you're a playoff team and you deserve to be in the playoffs, you should be able to beat Houston, Washington, San Francisco, Detroit, Chicago, and Jacksonville. Okay, that's six wins that you should have left on your roster, on your schedule. And then you need to go 3-2 against New Orleans, Arizona twice, LA and Green Bay. That's the situation you're in. That's the reality of it. You've got to beat the six teams that are beatable, and you've got to go 3-2 against the rest. Can they do that? Yeah, they can. Honestly, I think they can. Play the way you did in the second half and get Russell Wilson back. Continue to use that identity, your stated identity. I think they can. Defense is going to have to play better. Russ is going to have to do his thing late in games. But if Russell Wilson's on the field last night in overtime, I think they win. I don't think Russell takes that critical sack on third down. I don't think Russell fumbles the ball once your defense did its job and got you the ball back. Trey Brown, huge props to him for the huge hit on third down. That's the thing about Pete's system. It keeps it close until the end of the game, and then you need your quarterback to do the thing. Well, when your quarterback is Geno Smith and not Russell Wilson, no offense to Geno, he's not a starting quarterback in the NFL for a reason. You need a guy who can do the thing that he does at the end, which is what Russ is great at. It's why I think Russ is so foolish to not want to be a part of this system. It takes advantage of his best skill, which is his efficiency. It takes advantage of Russell's best skill, his efficiency. Sorry, Justin, go ahead.
Or you're on the other side of the ball. You need your other big elite player to step up and make the big play there, too.
I've pretty well given up the idea that your biggest playmaker's on defense. It's been six games. I haven't done anything. It's been six games. Jamal Adams lets the ball hit him in the face. Bobby Wagner is essentially invisible. I don't have the faith at all that your biggest two paid players on the defensive side of the ball are going to step up and do much more than they've done.
I like the text at 360. He was going for the face mask catch from Little Giants, which I know Salk doesn't know because you haven't seen the
I'm
Little Giants.
I'm a little old for Little Giants. I'm sorry.
But I like the text.
Does it get stuck right in the face mask?
Yeah.
Good luck getting that thing out, man. That would have been great. I think Jamal wears a face shield, unfortunately. Maybe he should take that thing off.
Could have helped.
Thing would have gotten stuck in there. 7:15, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, the stark contrast between effort and results on display last night. Seahawks did make a game of it. Nobody should question their effort. It was a heck of a football game, and they played their tail off. They really did. They showed all the heart you could ever ask for. A credit to Coach Carroll and how much he's got this team wired. I give him a lot, honestly, a lot of credit for it. In the second half, down at 14 points, playing without their best player, they dug deep. They ran the football. They found something to give them life and get them back in the game. Ultimately, though, reality hit them late. They fell in overtime 23-20, and this is a hard-line business. Here's the good news. It does look like they may have found that identity again in a running game that provided their only offense. Alex Collins running for 101 of their team, 144 yards on the ground. He did leave with an injury late. And when they ran it well, it opened up some plays in the passing game with the tight ends as well. So, good news, but again, reality. For the second straight week, Geno Smith's night ended with a turnover. This time it was a fumble at the hands of TJ Watt. Scary moment. Both teams gathering on the field after Darrell Taylor went down with a neck injury. He had to be immobilized and was taken straight to the hospital. Fortunately, Pete Carroll saying that the CT scans were clear and he traveled home with the team. A really great sign for him being okay. Elsewhere in the NFL, specifically the NFC West, Cardinals are still unbeaten. They had a big day against Baker Mayfield and the Browns. 37-14 your final there. Seven of those points against them come on a Hail Mary at the end of the half. They looked very good against a good opponent. Rams dominate the Giants 38-11. 130 yards receiving for Cooper Kupp. Daniel Jones sacked four times and threw three picks. So just in case you're wondering, Seahawks miles behind now in the division. They are 2-4. Rams 5-1. Cardinals 6-0.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, a crazy weekend for the local college teams. Likely nothing, though, compared to what could happen today. First on the field, Huskies coming back in a game at home against UCLA, but did give it up late. They lose 24-17. The final blow coming with just over 8 minutes left, so they did have opportunities, but not able to score again. They fall to 2-4 in the year. Also 1-2 in the Pac-12. Cougs seem to be going in the opposite direction, and I stress the word seem. They beat Stanford 34-11. They're now 4-3 on the season, 89 yards and a pair of scores for Max Borgie, including the game-winning touchdown, 289 yards, three scores for Jaden DeLora. He's playing pretty well. Stanford scored two touchdowns in the fourth quarter to bring them back into the game, even take the lead. I'm sure Cougs fans are just thinking deja vu all over again. But they come back again and get the win. Will Nick Rolovich come back, though, to coach the team this week? By all accounts, it's unlikely. Today is the state deadline for all public employees to be vaccinated. Rolovich has said he will not do that. He's appealed for a religious exemption. I guess it's possible it could be accepted, but in all likelihood, most seem to believe he will be out as the head coach of the Washington Cougars by the end of the day.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, you got your first taste of overtime in hockey this weekend. What'd you think? Didn't work out well. Kraken gave up a late lead in Columbus, lost in OT. Hockey does give out partial credit, though, for an overtime loss. If you can show your work, you do get 2 points for a win, 1 point for ending regulation and a tie. So that's kind of left over from the old days when games ended in ties after a five-minute overtime. So this is the way they do it now. Instead of playing 5-on-5 for those 5 minutes, they actually go 3-on-3. Does it help with scoring? Yeah, of course, there's a lot more open ice. I just don't like it. It doesn't look like hockey to me. It would be like going 7-on-7 for football overtimes. And you know what? Don't strike that. Don't say anything. I don't want Roger Goodell to get any ideas. So forget that.
Plant any seeds.
Take that off. Take that away from the podcast. Don't let Roger Goodell have any ideas. First of back-to-back games today for the Kraken. They're in Philly. 4 o'clock start this afternoon. And then just 85 miles up the road to Newark, they'll take on the Devils tomorrow. Baseball, quick check of the postseason. Braves up 2-0 on the Dodgers. They won last night on a walk-off single from Eddie Rosario. Astros and Red Sox tied 1-1. They'll head to Boston tonight. And congrats to the Chicago Sky. Candace Parker and her crew win their first WNBA championship. Those are three things you need to know. We do that every hour at 4:15 the hour.
509 text, Salk, you're delusional.
Oh, I am, yes.
First of all. If you think that was conviction that made them have the temporary success running the ball. They have conviction doing everything, but not much has worked because their talent level.
Well, look, I think their talent level is suspect, but if you look at the guys on their offensive line, what are they best at? Moving backwards or moving forwards? What is Brandon Schell? He's a mountain.
Yeah.
What do you think Brandon Schell's best at? Moving forward. What do you think Gabe Jackson's best at? Moving forward. Jamarco Jones ended up coming in after that drive, but you know, I think you got a pretty good guard in Damian Lewis. What's he best at? Moving forward.
Well, and they proved with 144?
144
rushing yards. Those are not luck yards.
No.
That was a pretty good defense to run against.
And it could have been more. Honestly, I thought that was a lousy holding call on Jamarco Jones, which would have sprung Alex Collins right after the turnover. Yeah, I thought they do have talent issues on their offensive line, but some of it is that those guys were chosen because of their ability to move forward. And instead, you're asking them constantly to be in pass-blocking situations. I just think it opens things up for their offensive linemen. Every offensive lineman you ever talk to, you talk to Ray Roberts, you talk to Robbie Tobeck, they love to move forward. They love to go take shots at the defensive linemen. And it seems to help them throughout the game. Now, obviously, at the end of it, T.J. Watt still had something left, and he was able to make the big play when they needed it. But I don't think it's just about roster. I think some of it is Pete Carroll being convicted on who he wants to be. You got to know what your identity is and then go try to live it. That's how you make decisions. Hey, 509, chill. Salk was being positive, LOL. I'm doing my best.
I hope positive. Russ, well, if you're going to say this is the identity with Russ when he does come back, because I Carroll's clip there, he does say the next 2 weeks and when in the future, right, for the rest of the season with Russ.
Yes.
Hopefully his next mock games are all handoffs on the pregame when he's under the camera Monday night.
What was that? What do we say about, like, what do you say about Russell? And, like, don't we need some time for this? He's weird. Russell's weird.
Sure.
The stuff before the game with the cameras on, that's cringeworthy, man. And you know what? I'm cool with it.
Thank you.
I am cool with it.
I thought you were going to start bashing on. I was like, I am fine with it because the only stat I care about are wins and losses. Yeah. And he seems to have a lot of wins.
Yeah, I don't mind Russ being weird. I get it. He's on the field. He's there for the coin toss, trying to help however he can. Like, he can't help himself. I kind of respect that. And we've criticized players for being absent in those situations and seeming like they don't care. So I don't want to sit here and, like, crush Russ for wanting to be a part of it. He also doesn't care if you think he's a dork.
No. But is there an element of stepping aside for Geno a little bit?
There is some concern there. I'm sure it's hard for him to step aside.
But it wasn't like he was taking away reps from Geno out there by himself.
That's true.
I don't understand the distraction
the
argument.
Attention, and maybe you would argue that taking the attention off Geno is what's best for him.
Sure, but the attention was put on him because the cameras were on him. He wasn't out there saying, hey, everybody turn these on. Let's get the sky cam going.
But hold on. He knows those cameras are there.
Of course, he has to know they're there.
He's pretty aware that those cameras are there.
To go as far as to start yelling out plays and everything, you're expecting attention.
He knows. That's an attention-grabbing move.
But not to take it away from Geno is my
point.
Well,
that may not be what he's thinking, but it does sort of do that. Because it's just more time. I mean, yeah, well, if anything, maybe it took some of the time away from Ben Roethlisberger. Nobody likes the cameras on him more than Ben.
Yeah.
Look, it was cringeworthy. Russ is a dork, but he doesn't care that you think that. He really doesn't. He does not care that you think he's a dork. I don't need the stuff with the cameras, though. That makes it seem a little showy. I don't need that. I wonder what his teammates think of that. I'm sure his old teammates, I'm sure Sherman Doug were just killing him last night on whatever private text thread they're on. But I do wonder what his teammates think. I'm sure they just sort of laugh. I'm like, whatever. Russ is weird.
Yeah.
Russ is weird. Like, what are you going to do?
It's his team.
The guy 360 thinks that said he had Uncle Rico vibes.
He did. He's going to throw the ball over that stadium.
Back in 82.
Man, that's funny, man. I just couldn't stop laughing at Russ out there doing it. But he doesn't care. He doesn't care that you think. He's not out there to make friends. He's out there to win as many football games as he can. And if he thinks this is what keeps him in the right mindset for next week, so be it.
But he didn't put the clip out, is my point. He's made some cringeworthy videos, but he's not the one that his team produced it and put that out there to be like, hey, just want to show everybody, still on it.
I don't know. He kind of did.
No.
It's not West to East Productions, you're right. But he knows damn well where those cameras are going to be. And he is right out there in front of them making a show. There's no doubt.
I would rather have him be confident.
And there are certain times where they're going to be there as opposed to other times. Yeah.
He's the only one there. Hey, everybody, look at me. All right, coming up next, if you're going to say you're the best in the nation, that's fine. I'm all for that. You know what you should do, though? Be the best in the nation. It's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
If you're going to say you're the best in the nation, you got to be the best in the nation. Like, that's a... You ever seen anybody do that on one of those NBC introductions? I've never seen that. We've seen some funny stuff, and years ago, guys decided to stop just saying their college, and some say their high school or their town they're from. I think that's great.
I've seen someone say, like, School of Hard Knocks.
I was just going to say that to someone, yeah.
I like some of that. Like, you ask, like, hey, Bobby, where are you from? I'm from Ontario, California. That's what I want to shout out. Cool. I think that's great. I think that's awesome. Like, if that's where you feel like you owe, you know, the shout out to, and that's where you were made instead of, you know, Utah State, good. I'm all for that stuff. And I don't even really mind Jamal Adams. I think it's just a ton of great personality coming out to say I'm the best in the nation. I thought it was fun. But you kind of have to back it up. You're not playing well, right? You're not making impact plays for your team.
And to be clear, that was a tribute to another person. It wasn't like he just came out and said it. I just want to make sure for anybody that didn't know, there is a story behind it, at least.
Jamal Adams, I'm the best in the nation.
Yeah, he's having fun with an old meme, right, of a guy who unfortunately has passed away since then. But there was a kid who was, in Georgia or something like that, who was asked a similar question. Yep. That's what he says. And good for Jamal. Like, it is funny. Jamal Adams has a ton of personality. Those are all the things you love about him. I'm not, like, mad at Jamal. I guess great. But you got to go pack it up, don't you?
Yes, yes. That was the look at me moment that you didn't want to take before that game.
What nation is he the best in?
Ooh.
I'm trying to think of, like, the various nations that he could be the best in. I don't think it's the United States. So what is the name? I mean, what was showed right under it that he was, like, 62nd of all safeties in the NFL so far this year, Pro Football Focus, something like that?
Nation of bad contracts.
Oh, I was going to say.
The best in the nation.
It's not nationwide commercials. That's Peyton Manning. So it can't be that nation.
Could it be 80s hair nation?
Oh.
Some Twisted Sister, some Rats.
I listen to Channel 39. Rocks. I'm pretty up on my hair nation. So yeah, it could be.
Could be the best.
I'm a Sirius XM guy.
My first thought was Tribe Called Quest, Zulu Nation.
Oh, you think he's in Zulu Nation?
Maybe.
I don't know. That was them and who else? Is that also like De La Soul and a couple of others?
Native Tongues.
Mm, yes. Probably, what's the one Busta was with?
The
LONS, Leaders of the New School, they're probably in there. Okay.
The Janet's Rhythm Nation.
Ooh, we're all part of the Rhythm Nation. So he's right about that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If it's Rhythm Nation, then yeah.
He's the Prez.
How about On Location touring around the nation, like the Beastie Boys who are always on vacation? He could be in that nation. That would be a good one.
I'm still going with the Nation of Stone-Handed Defenders. I said it earlier, and I think that's the one that he is the best.
I can't give you that one because it didn't hit him in the hands. You've got to at least get your hands on it before you can be stone-handed.
He's had enough. How many picks has he had in his career?
Like two.
Okay,
he has
how many
very
hit
few
him
picks,
in the hands?
A couple.
Okay.
He doesn't have great hands. There's no doubt.
Yeah, there's a reason he's on defense.
He had that one big pick six against Tom Brady a couple of years ago. But other than that, no, he's not had a lot of those. What about, I'm trying to think of other nations. How about The Nation, the magazine, the like news magazine that comes out every week?
Oh,
it's
yeah, like The Nation.
Progressive magazine that comes out every week.
So I've never heard of The Nation.
Yeah, like The National Review, and you never heard of any, they're all, you know, there's like a bunch of those magazines that come out
National
every
Inquirer.
Week.
National Enquirer.
Not that one. That one's more of a, that's a different guy.
The ones I got.
That's a different one.
509 says he was the best in the nation in college, that nation.
The college nation.
Nation okay. of Air Jordan arm and neck bands.
Does he go with both?
The neckband one throws me off. I don't really understand that one.
What is a neckband?
It's basically, it's the headband, but he wears it around his neck.
Oh.
You never seen this?
I don't think I've noticed it. I don't notice those things, but is that like a...
It's a bunch of armbands and the neckband.
Maybe he's covering something up. Maybe he sweats more there than another. Like, I can understand sweating in
neck.
Weird places. I've said before, like, my right armpit sweats much more than my left armpit, so I have some sympathy for sweating in strange ways. So maybe he's got, like, weird neck sweat. And he's just got to wear a neck.
I assumed it was like a rubbing thing, like his pads rub on it. So he wears the thing on his neck.
Okay.
That's what I assumed it was.
Could be.
Looks like he's wearing a turtleneck.
Any other nations he could be in? Nation of bad coverage?
Yeah,
whatever it is.
Nation of missed opportunities.
He's 210 says overpaid safeties nation.
That's a big nation.
Nation of best paid.
Yes, that's a big nation. Look, they changed the scheme for Jamal this time. Good for them. They let him blitz. They let him be himself, right? And he still did next to nothing. A couple of decent plays in the running game, but I thought Pittsburgh did a good job of just taking him out of the equation. The biggest names on this defense are very quiet during games. That, to me, is the problem. Who looked like the best players on the field for them? Trey Brown, DJ Reed, and Daryl Taylor. Honestly, yeah. They looked like the three best players on this defense yesterday. Bobby was quiet. Jamal was quiet. Ball hits him in the face when he has a chance to win the game. Those are supposed to be your Jordan Brooks, quiet. Now, maybe that was because they played better. I mean, I want to at least allow for the fact that the linebackers and the guys up the middle, Quandre Diggs, quiet. But I want to allow for the fact that they did clean up whatever was supposedly happening across the middle. And so maybe that's why they were quiet, because those plays weren't open. And so Ben didn't go in those directions. So I want to give some credit there. This is not just a rip job deal. And their defense was not the problem yesterday. But it needs to sometimes be the solution. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that, they had the solution. It hit him in the face.
Right. That's exactly right. Like, your defense, it's some weeks it's the problem. You give up 38 points and you're the problem. Some weeks you're not the problem. They weren't the problem yesterday. What was it, 23 points they gave up in the game, including overtime? That's a pretty good day.
Like 300 and something,
yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good effort from the defense. But where are you being the solution? Where are you coming up with the huge sack in the big moment? They didn't touch the quarterback once. Where are you when Jamal Adams has the ball thrown to him? The one turnover they got came when Ben Roethlisberger inexplicably dropped the ball. Right?
That was one of the most unathletic looking things I've ever seen.
Was it more or less unathletic than when he dove to the middle?
Thank you, yes.
What was that?
Wow, he looked old in that moment. Like, did he just trip and fall? Is he okay? Someone check on Ben.
I know what he was trying to do. He's trying to line the ball up in the middle of the field, but it was just it looked like when you're diving onto your bed or something. Like, I'm finally in bed for the night, except it was onto the ground. He kind of bounced and not pretty. Yeah, I don't know what Jamal's doing, man. I don't know about best in the nation.
Jamal Adams, I'm the best in the nation.
Nation of Misfit Toys, that's a good one from the 509.
You know what's so sad about it? If Jamal Adams was playing well, living up to the contract, forcing turnovers, helping this defense, we would love that. We'd love it. We'd be all in on that, man.
And the amount of people, do you remember all the people who are like, you have to get him signed. He has to be here. You cannot let him go.
Raise my hand, even if I'm sweating under this armpit. I was one of them.
All in on him last year.
Yeah.
What, 9.5 sacks?
He was great.
8.5. He had a great year.
He really, really had a great year. Okay. But you gotta make plays when they come to you. We gotta make plays when they come to you. We'll ask Brock about that. Plus, I want to know what Brock saw from Gino yesterday, and I'll play Brock that cut from Pete Carroll. If you haven't heard what Pete said about the running game and what it looks like in the future, I will play this for you next. It is a big time comment from Coach Carroll that absolutely has franchise changing implications. It's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Ewert is my hero.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Ewert says? No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Yeah! Yeah! Good morning, Brock, my happy friends.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm actually doing pretty well. We talked to Pete early this morning, taped with him in the 5 o'clock hour.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I've got some sound I'm going to play for you. The whole interview will air at 9:30.
But did he sleep? You probably need to right off the plane,
yeah,
right?
We got him right off the plane. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, I got Pete right off the plane with his leather jacket. Looked good. He looked, okay. I mean, of course, up all night on an all-night flight from the East Coast, and Pete shows up at 5 a.m., looks perfectly coiffed.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be nice. It would be great.
I can't do
years
that
old and look perfect.
45. I couldn't do that at 35. He does it at 70.
And meanwhile,
God,
I've like woken up, showered. Like, I still look terrible. Thanks a lot. No, I'll play you the sound in a minute. Let me start here. What'd you learn? We said that we would learn a lot about the Seahawks in these three or four games. What did you learn last night watching Geno in the offense?
Well, I thought in totality, they were pretty gritty and competitive.
Yeah.
That when adversity hit, and it hit, and they're down 14, they could have turtled. like a lot of teams did. Like you looked around the NFL, yesterday was one of the first weekends where you saw a bunch of blowouts where teams just were not competitive and didn't make it one possession games and didn't get close and everything else. They could have done that down 14-0. They did not. They responded. They had a tremendous third quarter into the fourth quarter as a group. They got physical. They were playing Olivia Newton-John. Let's get physical at halftime. I don't know if Pete let you in on that.
I don't think it was that, no.
Yeah, it was. No. He put on the leather jacket, and they played Olivia Newton-John, and then boom. No. Gabe Jackson and those guys came out and just started mauling people.
It worked. And so that's what I want to play you. So let me play you this sound from Pete. I asked him about halftime. He would not get into the details. He did say he was pissed, his words. So he was.
You could see it, couldn't you? At the end of the second quarter, they kept showing his face. And he was just not, he was not happy. Sacks, tip balls, just.
If I had to watch Geno Smith throw it over and over again, knowing that my stated philosophical belief about offense is that it should start with the run, which is how you complete the circle of toughness. Yeah, I don't blame him for being mad. Here's what he told me, and we'll play this whole interview at 9:30.
That's how we needed to play. That's how we need to play for the next couple weeks and on into the season. And really, Mike, that's how we've played when we're at our best for years. And there's a lot of people that want to, you know, gripe and complain about, you know, running the football and all that. But you saw, we scored 20 points in the second half. How many points do you need to score? I mean, 40 points in a game, that's pretty good, you know. And we did it by controlling the football game with the strength of our team.
And it really is, as I'm thinking about this, Mike, and listening to him, remember when Drew Brees like busted his thumb up and he had a tendon issue and he had surgery actually, and it was more significant than the middle finger. The thumb is more important. And then Teddy Bridgewater came in, and you remember what the Saints did for those 5 or 6 weeks? They came to Seattle, in fact, and Seattle couldn't tackle, one of the rare times they couldn't tackle Alvin Kamara in the run game, and played to the strength of their group and their O-line and their run game, and Teddy managed it through, I don't know, 15 to 25 passes, maybe a game. And I think they went either 5-1 or 6-0. And I think yesterday and after that first half, you realized, yeah, I mean, after four tip passes and a sack and just, you know, inefficiency, this is not who we are. Can we run it and then give Geno an opportunity to play pass a little bit? Sure. And give him a chance to throw it 2 or 3 times? Sure. Make good throws in the second half. But you're never going to win with him throwing it and your personnel, frankly. Mm-hmm. And this is still a crew that Brandon Shell is a better run blocker by far than pass blocker. Damian Lewis, a better run blocker by far than pass blocker. Gabe Jackson's a better run blocker than he is a pass blocker. Fuller, I don't know enough definitively to say, but I'm probably going to lean on the former rather than the latter. And Dwayne is really the one that can do everything. And man, I liked him getting mad too. I bet you he was the one at halftime. Collinsworth said, right? They were peeling the paint off the walls at halftime. Maybe it was Pete. I don't think it was Pete. I think Pete was very visibly upset and emotional, but it was, you could see Dwayne Brown, Titus turned to me a few times like, man, he looks mad.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's real mad.
You know, I don't know whether Pete, you're right. I don't know if Pete was yelling at the team or any of that. What I do think happened, and I don't think it's a stretch, is Pete just sat there and did the exact same thing, but in a lot shorter time frame that he did before he went to USC.
Mm.
I'm not going to go out compromising. I'm going to go out doing what I think is the right thing to do. Enough compromising.
We've had a few of these. I mean, we had a come to Jesus meeting with Shoddy after 2 weeks when the team was 0-2, right?
When things don't go the way he wants them to, Pete goes back to what he truly in his heart believes is the best strategy to win football games.
Yes.
And that's to run the ball.
Yes, and on top of it, with Will Dissly and your O-line that I just mentioned, and now an Alex Collins, and heck, even when Chris Carson's in there.
And next week when you get Rashad Penny back.
Uh-huh, yep. And when that happens, you can want to cook all you want, but if you don't have those ingredients, and most importantly, your chef, he doesn't like to do that. Okay, Chef Pete is not cooking.
So what happens next week then, or in a couple of weeks? Let's say this works. Let's say you do what you just said with the Saints, right? Or what the Saints did, and you do it to them. You beat the Saints, you beat Jacksonville, you run the ball well, circle of toughness, all of it. What happens when number three comes back? And I don't mean like when he's out there just like mimicking the game, when he's actually playing in the game.
And by the way, I think they asked Collins, have you ever seen this? Shame on him. Because that was Steve Largent, okay? Any good Seahawk fan knew that was Largent back in the day. He would do that after practices or practices he missed. He would do the whole script, the whole game by
including
himself.
Including the huddle?
Yes, including the huddle, break the huddle, get out to his position, run the route, come back, get in the huddle, clap his hands, break the huddle, would run out there and run the routes.
I mean, I respect the visualization of the whole thing. Yes. Honestly, I'm not making fun of that.
Yep.
It's a little showy in front of the cameras, though, right?
I don't know if he knows. Do you think he knows the cameras are on?
No, you're right. He probably doesn't know.
He doesn't know that.
Oh, they have cameras in this building before the game? Who
I mean, what happens is this is going to be your recipe to win this year. This is the personnel you have. This is who you are. Now, here's the one challenge with it, Salk.
One.
And you've watched this for a lot of years, and I was listening to you earlier as I was dropping Titus and Macy off at school. When you play this style, okay, when you play that style, it keeps good, you know, it keeps you close with elite teams and great teams and good teams, and then even bad teams. It keeps it close. So it's you know, you can play this style. It means, hey, Geno, it's going to be a one-score game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that doesn't work with Geno.
Correct.
As we said, he's had turnovers in the final drives.
So that's some of the challenge of all of a sudden beating the Saints and the Jags, and who knows when Russell's back. That's best case. Maybe it's Green Bay. Like that's the one challenge with the system, and that's why people would get so frustrated. And that's why when you talk to Seahawks fans, certainly try to engage with Seahawks Twitter, they say, man, if you got an elite quarterback against bad teams, you should hammer them. And yet I have heart attacks and cardiac arrest every weekend because it doesn't matter who they play. Yeah. That style keeps everybody into the late rounds of the fight. It's like Floyd Mayweather, right? I mean, it's just you're going to get to the late rounds, and it doesn't really, he's not going to knock you out, but he's going to be hard to beat, you know, and especially Russell over the course of his career, hard to beat in the fourth quarter. And that's the one challenge playing stylistically that kind of ball.
That's the one challenge with this
year. Russell.
But the bigger issue is, what is Russ going to say?
Yep.
I mean, at the end of the day, does Russ want to do that? I don't know that any of us can answer that question today, but if Pete is as convicted as he sounded in that clip, right? And again, we'll play the whole interview at 9:30. You can hear the whole thing. I don't know. Like, I don't want to start writing the end of the story, but if Pete is that convicted and we know that Russ wants to throw the ball more, that feels like that is a collision course.
Feels eventually. Like there could be a little friction. Yep.
And we don't have to talk about it today. Today's not about that.
No.
But it's going to have to get, like, you know, bookmarked for later because that is, you know, Pete's not, it sounds like he doesn't want to compromise anymore.
You think it was real leather or faux leather? Was it members only? Was it aviator? What
Pete?
Was the leather jacket?
Yeah. I think Pete's got enough cash. Kind of silver spoon guy. No, that's what he said about me years ago. But I think Pete's got enough cash that he can afford whatever kind of leather jacket he wants.
Nice.
And he wears clothes so well.
He does.
Like, everything Pete puts on fits him perfectly.
If there were a 70-year-old mannequin, he'd be it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
You're welcome.
Hey, you're Brock, what was DK doing at the end of the game? What was that? What was he doing?
That was one of the worst football IQ plays I've ever seen.
What was that?
That and Cody Barton not falling down.
I was going to say, which was worse? I got both of those on my list.
Cody, fall down. Just
fall down the other way.
Just fall down. Anyway.
Why?
But don't go tumbling into the end zone. Do you know where you were at on the field? And DK, do you know how much time and timeouts are left?
The DK one is much worse, man. The other one is getting kind of lost. Like, all right, whatever. Maybe he sort of got tripped into it.
Exactly.
DK Metcalf.
Into his suit.
What are you doing? Just step out of bounds. There's no ups. I mean, unless he thought he was going to get a touchdown out of it.
Ludicrous.
I don't know. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk tomorrow. All right, there you go. Brock Heward. And again, that Pete Carroll sound I think is huge. We'll play the whole thing for you. Coming up at 9:30 this morning. Up next, though, all of the takeaways from this game, including a revelation for the Seahawks. He's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.